Merry Christmas!
Playing the Forces Christmas soundtrack. BFBS Christmas. Only Fools and Forces, a Christmas special with Sir David Jason, OBE.
We have comedy royalty with us today. Sir David Jason, OBE, welcome to BFBS Radio. Happy Christmas, David.
Oh, and to you and to all your listeners. I was going to say viewers there, but of course I realise you're just you're the poor boys of the, of the industry. Yes.
The ugly sister of media.
That's right, yes.
Since we last spoke, have you had a new hip?
Yes, when was that? Do you remember?
I think it was last year.
Was it last year or was it year before?
I think I think it could have possibly been the year before.
Doesn't time fly when you're having fun?
So how many hips are we talking now
only
that you have?
Only one, don't exaggerate. So at the moment, I'm...
You're feeling all right?
I'm clear, yeah.
That's really good, isn't it? I was thinking that you're kind of like, you know, the amount of work you've had done, you're becoming the human equivalent of Trigger's broom.
Yes, you're quite right, that's it. Bionic van, yeah. I never thought of it like that.
Now, are you excited about Christmas?
No.
Are you not excited, honestly?
No, not really, because it's a lot of pressure that you find. The build-up to it is all... is it all worth it?
Do you have any special Christmas traditions within your family that are specific to you guys?
Not really, but I suppose the only thing is very, very traditional, and that is that we always have the festive fowl, if you like, you know, the turkey, and with all the trimmings, and that takes place in the evening, and my wife is a very, very good cook, you know, kicks me out of the kitchen. And we start in the morning and have a glass or two of sherry or, you know, whatever, and slowly put together the meal for the family. And that is my daughter and her fella and I got another daughter now, so that's a bit of a surprise this year. So, yeah.
We're gonna get into that as well a little bit later. Are you good at buying presents? And I feel as though I should look to your wife here. Possibly, and Gio and say, yeah, he's good. So you're good at buying Christmas presents?
No, that's my daughter. We arranged to come. We asked Jill, what would you like us to buy you for Christmas? And so my daughter and I go off to the big shopping centre and we wander about looking for something that vaguely represents what Jill has written down and make sure it's not too expensive. That's the most important thing.
Do you have any specific Christmas responsibilities? I mean, apart from just like, you know, eye candy, you know, wandering in occasionally to stir something, what are your kind of responsibilities?
Not a lot. No. No, I don't.
Do you put like the tree, buying, sourcing the tree, putting the tree up, decorating the tree?
No. Nothing. That's Jill's department.
And what do people tend to buy you at Christmas? What is the, you know, you end up with, I don't know, four boxes of licorice all sorts or something.
Exactly.
Is that what it is?
Well, yeah, it is in a way. I don't need very much. I don't want for very much, to be honest. But what I do like is quite cheap is models. These are wooden models and they're sort of working models. Like the one, sounds ridiculous, but I shall tell you anyway. the one that I've made two. And I'm going to put them up for charity, whatever. And what it is, it's about that big, which is what, 12 inches to 18 inches, say roughly. And it's a bloke sitting on a chair, and you wind a little handle, and he claps his hands.
Oh, yes, like yes. That. I know what you mean. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And anyway, the point that it's now well known amongst the family and close friends that. If they want to buy me something, they can buy me one of these or something similar.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, so and I quite like doing that. It keeps me occupied and keeps the old grey matter working.
Keeps you out of trouble.
Keeps you out of trouble. Yeah.
Hi, this is Colour Sergeant Liam Downs in Gibraltar. I just wanted to wish a Merry Christmas to everybody serving overseas and all their families.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never had. I want to be on the cover of Forbes magazine. Smiling next to Oprah and the Queen.
Yeah, I would have a show like Oprah. I would be the host of Everyday Christmas. Give Travi a wish list. I'd probably pull a Angelina and Brad Pitt and adopt a bunch of babies that ain't never had shit. Give away a few Mercedes like, here, lady, have this. And last but not least, grant somebody their last wish. It's been a couple months that I've been single, so you can call me Travi Claus, minus the ho-ho. Get it? I'd probably visit with Katrina here. And damn sure I'd do a lot more than FEMA did. Yeah. Can't forget about me, stupid. Everywhere I go, I'ma have my own theme music.
Oh, every time I close my eyes,
what you see, bro?
I see my name in shiny lights.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What else? A different city every night.
President, dunking on his delegates, then I compliment him on his political etiquette. Toss a couple million in the air just for the heck of it, but keep the 520 tins and bins completely separate. Yeah, I be in a whole new tax bracket. We in recession, but let me take a crack at it. I probably take whatever's left and just split it up, so everybody that I love can have a couple bucks. And not a single tummy around me would know what hungry was, eating good, sleeping soundly. I know we all have a similar dream. Go in your pocket, pull out your wallet, put it in the air and sing.
I wanna be a billionaire so freaking bad.
So bad.
Buy all of the things I never had.
Buy everything.
I wanna be on the cover of Forbes magazine. Smiling next to Oprah and the Queen.
What up, Oprah?
Bad. Only Fools and Forces playing the Forces Christmas soundtrack. BFBS at Christmas. A Christmas special with Sir David Jason, OBE.
I'm Richard Hatch, and I'm with the national treasure and comedy legend that is Sir David Jason, talking about his new book and his life and trying to work out where it all went so horribly wrong.
I'm joking. What does it mean, horribly wrong? I deny that last comment.
Congratulations on the book. It's called This Time Next Year, A Life of Positive Thinking. You've had a couple of very big professional setbacks that you've bounced back from. Lots of people will be amazed by the TV shows you got left out of. And let's start by talking about how you missed out on being in Monty Python's Flying Circus, because you were part of this zany TV show called Do Not Adjust Your Set. Just tell us a little bit about that show, will you?
Well, that show was my first really big break into television, meaning I had there were five of us, and we all had featured parts, if you like.
Yeah.
So, because we were a team, it was a little team, and we were doing sketches all the time. And so you were asked to play. You could be playing a tough bully, or you could be playing an idiot. Well, mostly me, and that was it. That's another story.
But
there.
Python-esque. Yeah. It's quite Python-esque, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And so that was very successful. And after the second or third series, the guys who were writing it basically were performing in it, Eric Idle and Mike Palin, and they were the creators, as it were. And they got a bit fed up being restricted into what they could say and what they couldn't say. and they wanted a bigger landscape to explore. And so when they were offered another series, they said, could you give us the series a late night slot, or later night slot,
yeah,
so that we can use...
Do different material.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. But you got left out. How do you know that? How do you deal with that, though? Because that show is one of those... I mean, you're in a British classic, of course, but that show at the time was kind of the birth of something amazing, wasn't it? Monty Python's Flying Circus. So it feels like almost like the Big Bang of sort of comedy or something like that. But you missed out. You were so unlucky not to be part of that. You were so close.
Yeah, I know. What happened was when the lads who were writing it, which is Eric Idle and Mike Palin, Terry Jones, they were the sort of cornerstone. And Denise Coffey and I were we were actors. We came from the acting fraternity.
I'm with you, yeah.
Whereas those guys came from the university fraternity. Mm. They knew each other from university, and they were a bit cerebral, which is nothing wrong with that. I mean, but they were a group together who spoke the same language, if you like.
With you. And you think that's why you got left out?
I think so, yes.
And you also should have been in Dad's Army. I mean, you got offered the part of Corporal Jones, didn't you? So tell us how you missed out on that.
Well, what was the question?
That's good. How did you miss out on that? What was the process? How did you miss out? Because you got offered the part. You were offered the part. You said yes.
Yeah.
And then was it Clive Dunn that said he couldn't do it or something like that? And then he was like, oh, hang on, I think I can do it.
That's a rough story. Like, you've read the book, haven't you?
I have read the book because it's great.
It's in the book, yeah. Well, the point of the story was I was an unknown actor. So I went to the BBC one morning and I did a little impersonation of that character.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that, you know. Yeah. And they said, yeah, great, that's lovely. Yeah, we'd love you to do it. Will you accept? I'll talk to your agent and we're off and running. So I was absolutely delighted because this was a major part in a major TV series that was just going to happen. And I'd read part of the script and thought, this is good
this
fun.
This is gold. Yeah. So how do you get... these are two of the biggest British... sitcoms of all time. How do you get past not being in those? I mean, look, you're looking for that break, aren't you?
Yeah.
This is what it's all about, is trying to find the hit.
Yeah.
And these are two of the biggest hits we've ever had.
Yeah.
And you miss out on both. How do you get over that? Seeing them being wildly successful.
Well, the ironic bit was in the morning I had been cast as the character. And by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was back out of work again.
But then again, of course, if you had said yes to either of those, you wouldn't have ever been in Only Fools and Horses.
That's true.
But, bouncing back like that is so Del Boy, isn't it? Because it is, you know, Del Boy is such an incredibly positive person. Something would go wrong. And he'd always be the very first person, wouldn't he, to look on the bright. Something goes to... He'd always go, this time next year, Rodney, we'll be millionaires. And it was always after some catastrophe that was happening. He would always be positive, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, that's what I liked very much about the character, because it was written by a guy who lived in that era and lived... All of those characters were people he'd met were based on real live people, and so he changed their names obviously for the right reasons.
It's what writers do, isn't it, that you take inspiration from the people you meet and life and all that stuff. I also think that that's why the general public just love Del Boy so much. It's that positivity, isn't it? It's always just dusting yourself off and just getting back on your feet again.
The other thing that I like about the show, and I've always liked about it, is that there is no bad language. You see, he manages, they manage.
Yeah.
They come from a working class family where you were brought up with, hey, language,
yeah.
Don't speak like that. That's the language of the street. You leave that outside.
Chateau Neuf de Pape.
Thank you. Yeah. I see you know how to swear.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very clever. That's exactly, you know, all of those are, you know what they mean by that. All the French phrases, you know, the mange tout, the bonnet de douche, all of those are words that you are supplanting into something else.
Exactly.
To mean something else. But it's beautifully done, isn't it? And there's so many jokes within jokes within jokes all the time.
Yeah. And that is one of the secrets of its success. And I think it's quite a big one because people have been able to watch Fools and Horses with the little kids that are like 5 years old to their grandfathers 90 years old. You're not in that danger area. Oh, where's the controls? He started to use that.
Completely.
So, yeah.
Only Fools and Forces celebrate Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
This is BFBS at Christmas.
A Christmas special with Sir David Jason, OBE.
Albuquerque.
Only Fools and Forces. Playing the Forces Christmas soundtrack.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
BFBS at Christmas.
I'm with Sir David Jason OBE talking about his new book called This Time Next Year, A Life of Positive Thinking. And in the book, you talk a lot about Ronnie Barker and how influential he was to you. And there'll be people listening, of course, who might not have heard of Ronnie. Could you just explain how big Ronnie Barker was back in the 70s and how you first met him?
Good Lord. You mean to say there are people out there who... Never heard of Ronnie Barker. Who must be mad?
What is the world coming to?
Exactly. Where have you been?
Well, in people of a certain age would... He was a master and of comedy in the British television firmament.
Yeah.
He was the biggest, probably the... most talented of all the comic actors that we know today or even in the past. And so he was a great hero of mine, and I grew up watching him in all his shows, Porridge, yeah. He did. And there were so many. The Two Ronnies, which is very, very famous, where they did sketches and musical items and all that. And it was must-see television. And at Christmas time, they would be dominating the channels. And I got introduced to Ronnie Barker through a producer that I worked with, who found me at the end of the pier in Bournemouth. But I won't go down that road. But because this producer had put... He was the one that did Do Not Adjust Your Set.
Okay.
He got me...
That was the connection. All right.
Yeah. And because, I got on very well with Ronnie, then when he did a show called His Lordship Entertains, where he played this completely mad, wonderful old codger, who was always sort of half... You're not quite sure whether he was drunk or not. But I think he was,
Yeah.
And it was that character, and I played a gardener, the 100-year-old gardener, Dithers. So Ronnie asked for me to play that character. And he was a character that didn't speak, but he only spoke in sort of flower terms, like he would say, "Are they getting there? They got there in a lot of old hollyhocks."
Like the Far Show. The Far Show had characters like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where did the bond with Ronnie come from then? Was it a comedy bond? Was it a background bond? What did you like about each other?
But mainly comedy, because I just was so in admiration of his ability. But not only that, but he was a really, really nice, generous man.
As an actor. Right.
And what that did for me was it proved to me that you don't have to be, if you're the leading character, you don't have to behave like, no, I don't do it like that. No, excuse me. Where's my coffee? And behave badly then.
Yeah.
He was very generous and lovely person to work with. And what I learned from that experience, and I learned constantly from Ronnie quietly on my own, was that was the best way to get not only the best out of other people, but it got the best out of yourself because you enjoyed it. Mm. You really enjoyed the work and the process of it. And from that, I've used that as a yardstick for everything that I've done ever since.
Hi, my name is Second Lieutenant Tom Selway from the CUOTC, and I'm a medical student out here in Brunei. Merry Christmas to everyone. I hope you have a great time. I'll be with family down in London, and we'll probably be playing some very uninspired charades.
Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low.
Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. Staring at the bottom of your glass, hoping one day you'll make a dream last. But dreams come slow and they go so fast. You see it when you close your eyes. Maybe one day you'll understand why everything you touch surely dies. But you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. Staring at the ceiling in the dark, same old empty feeling in your heart. 'Cause love comes slow and it goes so fast. Well, you see her when you fall asleep, but never to touch and never to keep. 'Cause you loved her too much and you dive too deep. Where you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. You only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. 'Cause you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go.
So David Jason is our special guest, and it's an honour to have him here in BFBS Radio. Now, I don't think we've ever really talked about your mum and dad before. Tell us about your mum and dad.
Well, the irony of that is that they were lovely people. And they were... Well, my father was a particularly hard taskmaster. He was fairly strict, and he was never very loving, whereas my mother was. And so he was strong, working class, and he worked very hard. He was a fishmonger, which is not very exciting. And my mother was a char lady.
Right.
That she used to go out and clean for people. And that was the way that they made ends meet. Interestingly enough about that, I would say, is that they were of a generation, because one has to remember that it was just after the war, unfortunately, and they had to get on with it. They had to learn to live, scratch a living for their children, mm. which was three of us. That was my elder brother, me and my younger sister. And to put food on the table in those days must have been a...
attritional, just like hard, just it's difficult. Life was hard.
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah.
And so they went through that terrible period. And what it did was it made them totally resilient, is they had to get on with it and solve the problems yourself.
Yeah.
There wasn't anybody you could go to. I didn't see that much of his concern for family.
Yeah.
But my mother did. So it was a hard upbringing, a tough upbringing, and that sort of make the person that you are, I suppose.
Yeah. So what did they say, you know, perhaps what did your dad say, you know, when eventually you said, look, Dad, I want to be an actor. What was the reaction to that? Because did you have those conversations?
What happened was I went home. I said, guess what? The councillor at the local council, Brian Barnett, have said they would recommend me for a drama course, and the council would help to fund it. And it was greeted with silence. And I said, what do you think? They said, now listen, if that's what you think that you want to do, you have to leave home because we can't afford to have another one. Meaning my brother had been to drama school and it didn't pay the way. So they had to support my brother.
You needed to generate money for the house.
Yes.
You needed to bring money in to help.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, it's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So what happened was they said, if you want to follow that course, then you have to leave home. They said it nicely, but
yeah,
it did hit home.
Wow.
So that was it. So I didn't.
How much of your success did your mum and dad see? At what level did they see?
Very little.
Really?
My mother saw basically a lot of my early career because she used to go as a member of the audience. But they did see, I do remember, my very first television appearance, which was quite amusing, really. And it was a Christmas pantomime that BBC did every year. And what they did was you did a pantomime and you rehearsed it and you rehearsed it and, you know, you got a show together and you put it on live on the stage.
Yeah.
And the BBC filmed it live, as it were. Anyway, the story was that I played the King of Gooseland in Mother Goose, and I played about four characters or three characters. And when I sat round on Christmas Day with my mother and father, and I was sitting there and I'm going, that's me there, that one. And my father and I go, well, where? He's gone now. And I played a dancer in one of the village shots. But the big one that I played was the King of Gooseland.
Yeah.
So I was doing that all day. And I'm not on in,
no, not
not
him.
In this bit. No. So you can relax. Go and put the kettle on, Mum. And we'll have a... And then... Now, don't miss the King of Gooseland. He comes up.
Excellent.
So it was fun. It was... And exciting. Of course, for me to see myself.
Of course it was,
on
yeah.
television.
So he obviously didn't get it. So he didn't see, you know, Only Fools. None of your A Touch of Frost or Open All Hours.
One,
it's
yeah.
such a shame, though, isn't it? They didn't see... And they didn't see United or anything like that.
No.
That's
no.
such a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I think the pair of them would have been very excited. I'm just trying to think, would they... How would they have handled it? I don't think that, knowing them as well as I did, with their feet on the ground, working class people, that they would have been that excited. Or if they were, they held it back. They didn't,
yeah.
They were not the sort of people who would say, oh, that's brilliant, it's exciting, oh, we can't wait. It would be...
More muted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apart from agreeing to be interviewed by me, do you have any regrets professionally?
That's the first. That's the biggie, love. You've hit the nail on the head there. Yes. No. I like to keep working. I'm still. I did. I only last week I was playing a major character in the Doctor Who books. I'll have you know. Yes. So, no, I haven't got any. So much joy and personal pleasure that I've got out of following a dream that I had. And that's the most important driving force. Enjoy it.
And forces. BFBS at Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
A Christmas special with Sir David Jason, OBE.
I'm with Sir David Jason, OBE, talking about his life and his new book. And I forgot to ask you, what do you think of this Christmas special? It's called Only Fools and Forces. Okay? That's the name of the show. One of our listeners came up with that, a guy called Clive. So do you want, to hear some of the other suggestions? And you can just tell me what you think.
Yeah.
So, Sir David Jason, Christmas lights, camera, action.
Yes, carry on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the good ones.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, God.
Sir David Jason, there's no business like snow business. I know. Seriously, this is...
good.
Resting Grinch face, a Christmas special with Sir David Jason. He's not even... He's just shaking his head there. One of our favourites was Sir David Jason, Mange Two.
I don't mind that.
See, I think quite like that.
Yeah.
I quite like that.
I don't mind that.
Sir David Jason, Bonnet de Douche, Christmas special. What did you think
about
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's because, well,
because it can mean anything. Because it can mean anything. Exactly. That's what's so nice.
Exactly.
And I quite like the idea of listening to our other radio presenters trying to say that and not really understanding perhaps what that is even.
You know how it came about?
That tell me, tell me.
It was because I was very unworldly and had never travelled, really. And when I was starting at the very beginning, I met a very lovely fella called Malcolm Taylor, and I got to know him and his wife very well. And they said, "We're going to go to Paris for the weekend. Do you want to come with us?" Like, that was how nice they were. So I did. And in my room in France, in Paris, very like just a small bedsit type bed, a bed and breakfast type place. And I went to the bathroom, and there, hanging on the peg, and it said "bonnet de douche," and I looked at this, and I fell about. I said, "Bonnet de douche? What the hell does that mean?" So I went to see my friends now for breakfast, and I said, "What on earth is a bonnet de douche?" And they said, "It's a shower cap. It just says shower cap." I said, "But why is that such a funny name?" You know, that went on. So from that moment on, any time anything funny happened or strange, and I would say, "Oh yeah, it's a bonnet de douche," like that. And so it got itself into the show, into Fools and Horses.
My favourite sketch in the whole thing, and we've talked about it before, is the chandelier sketch.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the chandelier sketch, because that was actually your idea, wasn't it, the chandelier sketch?
Well, yes, basically. What happened was I was having, after the show, one of the shows, I was having a drink with the writer, Johnny Sullivan, and we were chatting about this and that, and he said to me, he just said, "Yeah, that reminds me," he said, you were an electrician, weren't you? And he said, and I said, yeah, I was. Why is that? He said, "Well, it's because my father had an interesting moment about that." So I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, he was a bit of a, you know, would do anything to earn a crust, you know, was a bit of a East End lad, was Johnny's father." And so he said that he was working in a big country house doing decorating, and the man who owned the big country house said, "You don't know anybody who could clean chandeliers, do you?" And of course, being a, you know, a good Cockney lad and wanting an earner, he said, "Yes, sir, we do them." So he didn't know what he was saying, really, but he said, "Well, could you take that down and clean it, and obviously I'll pay you for it." "Yes, sir, yeah, we can do that, no problems at all, yes, okay," and all that went on. And John was telling me this story in the bar, and he said that what happened, there was another chandelier that they had to do, two chandeliers, and the one that they were started to work, they decided to take it down in order to clean it, and so that's what they were doing, and they sent their father's assistant upstairs to be prepared for the other one. So what happened in the real story was exactly what happened in real life.
Oh, wow.
So when he said, John Sullivan said, "While we were working on this one, expecting it to come down, my father's brother upstairs, Harry, he was busily undoing
the other nuts. Yeah.
So,
for the other chandelier.
Yeah. So I fell about and I thought that.
Such a funny story.
It's
though,
wonderful.
It's joy, yeah.
Yeah. So John said, "Do you think so?" I said, "It is so funny. It's so them," I said. "It's so much
it is,
them.
Isn't it? Yeah."
I said, "You've got to write it in. You've got to write it up, John." So he said, "Oh, I never thought of that." So the rest is history.
Party girls, don't get hurt, can't feel anything. When will I learn? I push it down, push it down. I'm the one for a good time call, phone's blowing up. Ring up my doorbell, I feel the love, feel the love. The light goes down. I'm gonna swim from
comes the shame, here comes the shame.
I'm with comedy legend, national treasure, Sir David Jason. The last chapter of your book, Chapter 7, is titled The Surprise of All Surprises. So set the scene for us. Tell us about the letter you got that completely changed your life.
Yeah, well, I had a letter that came through, just a letter of many that you get in the business, asking for autographs and one thing and another. And this letter said, "I'm apologise for infringing on your time and etc. and so forth. But my mother told me that that you were my father," said the writer of this letter. And to cut a long story short, she said, "Would you mind taking one of those tests?
DNA tests."
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought it was such a... her mother, who I did know and I did go out with, when she mentioned who her mother was, and I thought, yes, of course. I thought, oh, yes, she was a girlfriend of mine. And she was in Under Milk Wood, and that's how we met, her mother and I. And so I said, yes, but there's no way that we did everything by the book, sort of thing. So I said yes. And the DNA came back giving a 90-something percent positive identity to me being the father.
Yeah. So then what happens? So then you arranged to meet up?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Knocked me sideways. Well, she had a young son then who has since grown up and is nearly your size. No, his size. giant.
Like a normal person size.
Yes, exactly. And anyway, we then met on neutral ground down at a hotel near Brighton where she was living. And it was quite a struggle, really, to have a grown-up person that you'd never met before, that you had no idea that was related to you in any shape or form, to be sitting there saying that I'm your daughter. So it was a difficult time to come to terms with. And slowly, over a period of a year or two, we've slowly got closer, and she comes to the house with her son, and it's fun. I must say that Jill has been absolutely brilliant at this and made her more welcome, because you could imagine, and
the irony of it all is that me being now nervous and not understanding and finding it all very difficult, that Jill said to me one day, we're going to have to tell Sophie, the daughter we brought up. And so I took her into the library and sat her down and I said, I've got something to tell you. And I want you to know that, you know, it makes no difference to us. And I did this big spiel about how these things come about and whatever. And I said, what the top and bottom of it all is, you have a sister who's a grown-up person. And she said, oh, lovely, when can I meet you? Talk about pulling the rug from under you. But it was lovely, meaning what a relief that being able to say such a big thing to your family. And her immediate reaction was, oh, that's all right then.
When can I meet you?
Lovely.
Okay, it's almost time to let you go. We live in a very unsettled world at the moment. As always, our military are there protecting our country, our values, our way of life, and they're listening to you all over the world, in Europe and all across the UK and across the Middle East. Do you have a special Christmas message for them?
Yes. I just would like to say that just keep doing what you're doing, and if and when you can, enjoy it. You have a very big responsibility, is to look after us and idiots like me. But without idiots like me to rely on real people like you, we would find ourselves sorely pushed. But keep it up, and you know it makes sense.
So, David Jason, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And to all your lovely listeners.
Only Fools and Forces. Playing the Forces Christmas soundtrack.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
BFBS at Christmas.
Yeah. reach out to the top. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Until the last day that I drop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is something you can't stop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. To the left, to the right. Keep it going, so.
On the app,
on FM,
and DAB Plus throughout the UK. This is BFBS,
BFBS,
the Forces Station.